Chapter 17. 5 chokes on the next breath he takes. A bubble of blood spews from his mouth. His skin, no longer covered by a layer of steel, goes pale in a hurry. His remaining eye goes wide, and in that moment, before I watch it roll back in his head, I see fear there. Maybe 5 thought he wanted this, but now, looking death in the face, he is scared. 5 collapses backwards into the grass, seizing and struggling to pull in painful-sounding breaths. 10 seconds. Impaled by a sign pole, that's how long I'd guess 5 has left to live. He betrayed us. He told the Moogs where they could find us and got 9 safe house blown up. Because of 5, Cetricus Ra was able to kidnap Ella, and Sam's dad was almost killed. He murdered 8. With that needle-shaped blade that even now tears up chunks of dirt as 5 spasms in the grass. 5 executed one of his own people. He deserves this. But I'm not like him. I can't just watch him die. God damn you, 5! I say through gritted teeth as I run forward and slide into the grass next to him. I press both my hands to his chest and use my healing legacy, putting enough energy into him to at least staunch some of the internal bleeding, buying myself time to do the bigger healing. 5 comes back to himself a little. His one eye finds mine, and I think I catch the corner of his mouth twist into a knowing smile. Then he passes out from pain and shock. I need to get this metal pole out of him. Obviously, I haven't read a whole lot of medical textbooks, but I'm pretty sure removing it will further damage 5's insides. Therefore, I should be healing him at the same time that metal is removed, hopefully to minimize the damage. I wrestle 5's limp body into a sitting position, propping him up against me. Then I wave Sam over. I need you to use your telekinesis to push the metal out of him, I tell Sam quickly. That way I can concentrate on the healing. Sam hesitates. He stares at 5's mortally wounded frame and swallows hard.
I don't think so, John.
What do you mean?
I mean, I don't think you should save him, Sam replies, his voice more resolute now.
He glances over his shoulder at 9's unconscious body.
I think 9 was right with how he handled this.
My hand is on the back of 5's neck. I can feel his pulse getting slower. I stabilized him, but it won't last long. He's fading. I'm not sure it'll work if I try using my telekinesis at the same time as my healing. He's dying, Sam.
I know.
This has gone too far, I say. We're not killing each other, not anymore. Help me save him, Sam.
No, Sam replies, shaking his head. He's too... Look, I'm not going to stop you. I know I couldn't even if I tried, but I'm not helping you. I'm not helping him.
Hell, I'll do it,
Daniela says, pushing by Sam and kneeling on the ground next to me. I stare at Sam for a second longer. I get why he's refusing to help. I really do. I'm sure 9 wouldn't be leaping to my aid if he was conscious either. Still, I'm disappointed. I turn my attention to Daniela. She's staring at 5's impalement like it's the craziest thing she's ever seen. She reaches out one hand towards where the metal disappears into his chest, but can't quite bring herself to touch it.
Why?
I ask her. You don't know 5 or what he's done.
Why would you...
Daniela cuts me off with a shrug.
Because you asked. Now, we doing this or not?
We're doing this, I say, setting my hands on either side of 5's wound.
Push. Gently.
I'll heal him as we go. Daniela squints at the piece of metal, her hands hovering a few inches away from 5's chest. I wonder if she has the control for this.
If she exerts too much telekinetic force, she could end up rocketing the steel pole right out of Five, and I'm not sure I'll be able to heal his torn-up insides fast enough. We have to go slow and steady, or risk Five bleeding out. Slowly, Daniela starts to push the metal. Five's breathing quickens when she does, and he begins to squirm, although his eyes stay closed. She keeps her focus and has better control than I anticipated. I press my hands to Five's chest, one on each side of the wound, and let my healing energy flow into him. "Gross, gross, gross," Daniela mutters under her breath. I keep sending energy into Five, sensing his injuries mending, but also feeling my legacy thwarted by the metal still in his body. That's until I hear a wet thunk in the grass and realize Daniela has successfully pushed the post out of Five. When that happens, I really amp things up, healing his lungs and spine. When I'm done, Five breathes easier. He's still unconscious and, for the first time I can remember, looks almost peaceful. Thanks to me, he's going to live. Now that the moment has passed, I'm not sure how I feel about that. "Damn, man," Daniela says. "We should be surgeons or something."
"I hope we don't regret this," Sam says quietly.
"We won't," I say, glancing at Sam. "I did this. He's my responsibility now." With that in mind, and considering he's still knocked out, I quickly undo the wrist-mounted blade from Five's forearm and toss it into the grass at Sam's feet. Sam picks it up, carefully examines the mechanism, and then hits the button to retract the blade. He tucks the weapon into the back of his jeans. I remind myself that even without his blade, Five isn't fully disarmed. I open up both of his hands, looking for the rubber ball and ball bearing that he carries around to trigger his externa. He isn't holding them, so I start patting him down. When they don't turn up in his pockets, I know there's only one place they can be. Cringing, I peel back the yellowed gauze pad that covers Five's ruined eye. Jammed into the empty socket is the glinting ball bearing and its rubbery partner. It can't be comfortable to have those two things stuffed inside his head. This is the life I've saved? A guy who sees losing an eye as an opportunity for more efficient storage? I use my telekinesis to scoop the two spheres out of Five's eye socket and chuck them into the grass. He moans, but doesn't come to. "That's nasty," Daniela says. "No kidding," I reply. I look over at Agent Walker. She's been watching this whole scene in silence. I know she probably sided with Sam and thinks I should have let Five die. That's how I know I did the right thing. "Get me something to tie him up with," I say to Walker. Having just watched me scoop out hidden treasures from Five's eye cavity, it takes Walker a moment to react to my request. She reaches behind her, unclips her handcuffs, and tosses them to me. I catch them and immediately toss them back. "You know that's a terrible idea, right? He turns into whatever he touches, Walker. Go get me some rope or something." "I'm an FBI agent, John. I don't carry rope around with me." "Check the boat," I say, shaking my head. Annoyed that I'm giving her orders in front of the other agents, Walker sends Agent Murray jogging off to check if there's any rope on the Coast Guard boat.
"You're soft, Johnny."
I turn around to see that Nine's regained consciousness. He's sitting up with his forearms braced against his knees, his head hunched a bit, like it's still bothering him. He looks from me to Five and back, shaking his head.
"You know how hard it was to shove that signpost through him?"
Nine sighs. I walk over and crouch in front of him. "You mad?" Nine shrugs his burly shoulders, seeming oddly zen.
"Whatever, dude. I'll just kill him again later."
"I really wish you wouldn't." Nine rolls his eyes.
"Yeah, yeah, all right, man. I get that you're against the death penalty and all that shit. Did he beg you to save his life, at least? I would have liked to have seen that.
He didn't beg, I tell Nine. In fact, I think he wanted to die.
Sick,
Nine replies. I didn't want to give him what he was after.
Uh-huh. I know we usually lose when the bad guys get their way, John, but, man, I think this one was a win-win.
I disagree. Nine rolls his eyes, then looks towards Five.
We can never trust him, though. You know that, right?
I know that.
And if it comes down to it, I'm not going to hesitate to do it again. You won't be able to stop me.
You must still be concussed, I say to him with a smile, deflecting the bluster. I gesture to his chest and arms, still covered in scrapes and blaster burns, and his broken hand. You want me to finish healing all that? Nine nods.
Unless you only do work on murderers now,
he replies. While I heal Nine, Daniela comes over and introduces herself. She gets the usual Cheshire grin from the big idiot. We bring him up to speed on everything that happened while he was brawling across the city with Five. When I'm finished, Nine turns to look out at the water and the burning city beyond.
We should have done better,
he says quietly, shaking out his arms and legs, stretching his muscles.
Should have gotten him when we had the chance.
I know, I reply. It's all I've been thinking about.
We'll have more chances,
Nine says, then claps his hands and turns to Agent Walker.
So, you bringing us to Mexico or what, lady?
Walker raises an eyebrow at Nine. Just then, Agent Murray returns, jogging back with his arms full of thick rope he must have freed from the boat. He hands it over to me, and I proceed to tie up the still unconscious Five, binding his wrists and ankles as tightly as possible. The cuffs of his jeans hitch up as I'm yanking closed the knots, and I catch a glimpse of his scars. So similar to mine, identifying us as part of the same nearly extinct people. How did Five ever get to this point? And what happens next?
What are we going to do with him? Sam asks, reading my mind.
Prison, I respond, realizing this is what I want only when I say it. Just because I saved his life doesn't mean there won't be justice. We need a padded room for him, one where he can't touch anything remotely hard.
That can be arranged, Walker says.
She makes this offer quickly. It makes me wonder if she and the government have already designed places like that for us. Prisons capable of holding us in spite of our legacies? Maybe that was something MoGPro was working on. Arrange it after you figure out how to get us to Mexico, I tell her. We're not waiting any longer, Walker.
What does that mean?
It means that if the president or those generals or whoever the hell's in charge over there don't get us on a jet in the next 10 minutes, we're just going to take one. Walker snorts at this.
You can't fly a jet.
Bet you somebody will volunteer when I start breaking faces,
Nine says, stepping forward to back my play. Agent Murray unclips his own walkie-talkie from his belt and offers it to Walker.
Just make the call, Karen,
he sighs. Walker gives Murray an icy look and produces her own satellite phone and walks a few steps away from us. Despite our history, I'm pretty convinced that Walker really does want to help us. It's the rest of the government that isn't convinced we're a good bet to win this war. She's doing everything she can in the face of that. Our window to be of any help to Six, Sarah, and the others is getting smaller and smaller, though. I can't stand around any more hoping that these people will support us in our fight. We're going to save them, whether they want us to or not. That's all there is to it.
You guys aren't really going to attack the army now, are you?
Daniela asks, keeping her voice low so the agents don't overhear.
Shit, I can barely stand up,
Nine replies quietly.
We do need to get down there, though, Sam says,
and I know he's thinking about Six as much as I'm thinking about Sarah.
If she can't help us, what are we going to do?
Nine looks at me.
You'd actually go through with it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I say. If they won't help, we'll make them. Daniela whistles through her teeth. That's intense, man. I look over at Walker. She's keeping her voice quiet, but is making a lot of emphatic hand gestures. She knows what's at stake. Walker will come through. As I say this, I produce my own satellite phone. I should check in with Sarah and Six, see where they're at, and make sure they aren't going to try taking on Cetricus Ra by themselves. Before I can hit the button to dial, there's a strange and loud whooshing sound from the water. We all turn in that direction just in time to see a large metallic cylinder fly out of the river. It soars high into the air, jets of water shooting off it as it spins towards the nearby docks. The thing is big. Big enough that when it lands with a shriek of crumpling metal, bricks go exploding outwards from the impact. I see the captain of our commandeered Coast Guard boat go diving overboard into the water to avoid the flying debris. It's the submarine we saw in the harbor earlier.
What? How is that possible? Sam exclaims.
Something tossed the submarine right out of the water. We run towards the docks to check for survivors, although it doesn't look good. The back half of the vessel is crumpled in like a crushed aluminum can, and there are jagged trenches clawed in the sub's side paneling. We can see right through the walls as we get closer. The ship definitely took on water. Loose wires from the fried electrical systems spit sparks as we approach. Careful, I say. Don't get too close.
What the hell could have done this?
Nine asks, his hands braced on his knees as he catches his breath. As if in answer, the captain of our boat screams. 1 minute he's treading water and waiting for us to tell him it's all clear, and the next, there's a dark shadow growing underneath him. He's sucked beneath the waves with a sharp cry and swallowed whole by the beast that slowly rises from the depths of the Hudson River. We all take a step back, then another. Two of the agents break off into sprints in the opposite direction, horrified by the size of the creature before us. Water flows off the monster's knobby skin, which is translucent to the point where I can see the black blood pumping through its power-line-sized veins. It is hairless, neckless, and hunched. Crooked fangs protrude from its lower jaw and make it impossible for the thing to fully close its mouth, a steady stream of yellowish drool spilling forth. Gills the size of helicopter propellers spasm as the monster takes its first breath of air. It's on all fours, its hind legs bowed, its front legs more like thick gorilla arms, and already it's almost as tall as the Statue of Liberty. The tough girl attitude drops pretty quickly for Daniela. She screams, and Nine has to clap a hand over her mouth. I don't blame her. The monster is terrifying. And I fought plenty of the Mogadorian's twisted creations before.
Holy shit, Sam whispers. It's a freaking Tarrasque.
My head whips around to Sam in disbelief.
You've seen one of these before?
No, I...
he stammers.
It's a D&D thing.
Nerd,
Nine mumbles as he slowly backpedals. Daniela shoves Nine's hand away, getting it together enough to glare at me.
You didn't tell me they have a... freaking Mogasaurs?
This must have been what Cetricus Ra dropped into the water when the Anubis left this morning. One last gift for the decimated city of New York. A reminder for the military presence of who's really in charge. I let my lumen course over my hands. I'll have to generate a lot of fire if I'm going to make a mark on this beast.
I know you can see this thing! Walker shouts into her satellite phone, probably blowing out the eardrum of whoever she was having a hushed conversation with just moments ago.
Air support! Get me some goddamn airstrikes!
The Mogasaur tilts its flat face towards the sky. The viscous membranes that I take to be nostrils start to twitch. Then it opens its eyes, each one milky white, arranged in a diamond pattern on the beast's broad forehead. It's hard to make out at this distance, but I could swear I see a glimmer of cobalt blue in each of those eyes. From the center of each eye, where the pupil would be, I can definitely see a ripple of bluish energy firing into the creature. The color. The energy. It reminds me of our pendants. Could this be the result of what Cetricus Ra was doing when I glimpsed him on board the Anubis? But what does that mean? Besides being as big as a building, what can this monster do that the others we've faced can't? Are the stolen pendants powering it somehow? Or are they doing something else entirely? Still standing just off the shore, the Mogasaur swings its head around and looks directly at us.
Shit! Nine says, stepping back. Is it coming this way?
Now! Walker screams into the phone, backing up as well. It's a goddamn giant!
I think it can sense us, I say. I think Cetricus Ra left this here to hunt us.
Okay, Daniela replies. I gotta go.
As if in answer, the Mogasaur lets out a deafening roar in our direction, spraying mist from the river and its rotten fish breath all over us. Then it lifts one of its front arms out of the river muck and brings it crashing down on the dock. Wooden beams explode in splinters, and the concrete walkway caves in. Two of the ferry boats pushed underwater, like toys. It's coming this way. I lob a fireball at the Mogasaur. Quickly, I realize it's too small to do any damage. The fireball sizzles and leaves a scorch mark in the monster's hide, but it doesn't even notice.
Run! I shout. Fan out! Use the statue as cover!
Nine, Daniela, Walker, and Murray all run back towards the grass and the statue. But Sam stays rooted in place, even as the Mogasaur takes another booming step towards us.
Sam! Come on!
I shout, grabbing him by the arm.
John, do you feel that?
I stare at Sam. Both of his eyes are changed. Filled up with crackling energy, they look almost like two out-of-tune TVs, except the light Sam's eyes gives off is bright azure.
Sam, what the heck?
Before I can finish my question, Sam spasms once and collapses. I manage to catch him and try to drag him backwards. Daniela and Nine see this happen and stop in their tracks.
Johnny, what's wrong with him?
Nine shouts.
Grab him and run, Daniela adds.
Boom! Another explosion behind us. The Mogasaur has gotten all its limbs out of the water, practically crushing the entire dock beneath it. The submarine is stuck like a thorn in the palm of its front hand, and the beast is temporarily distracted trying to shake it loose. I don't know what's wrong with Sam, but I don't think the gargantuan brute behind us is the cause. His affliction is something else entirely.
He passed out, I yelled to Nine. He...
I'm cut off as both Daniela and Nine go all herky-jerky, their eyes filling with the same blue light. They slump to the ground at the same time, collapsing on top of each other.
No!
And then it happens to me. A tentacle of vivid blue light rises up from the ground in front of me. For some reason, I'm not afraid. It's almost like I recognize this weird energy formation. I can sense that it runs deep into the earth. And I can also sense that if Agent Walker or the Mogasaur or someone without legacies was to look where I'm staring right now, they'd see nothing but empty space.
This is just for me. It's my connection. My connection to Lorien. Faster than my eye can follow, the finger of light attaches to my forehead. Right now I'm sure my eyes are spilling electric energy just like the others did before they passed out. I feel it happening. I'm leaving my body. I recognize the sensation. It's exactly like when Ella pulled me into her vision. Ella? I say, although I'm pretty sure this word doesn't actually come out of my mouth. I'm pretty sure that my body's currently prone on the docks, not all that far from the biggest monster I've ever seen in my life. Hi, John, Ella replies inside my head. When she does, I can hear her saying other words as well, like she's holding down hundreds of conversations at once. I don't think to ask how this is possible. Ella's supposed to be thousands of miles away with Cetricus Ra, or, hopefully, in the process of getting rescued by Six. She's not this powerful. Her powers don't work like this. I don't think of any of that. I'm more focused on my physical body, not to mention Nine, Sam, and Daniela. Whatever Ella's doing to us, she couldn't have picked a worse possible time. What the hell is happening? You're going to get us killed! Any second, I expect to hear the crunch of my bones as the Mogasaur steps on me. It doesn't come. Instead, shapes begin to form in front of my eyes, blurry, indistinct forms, like a movie projector that's out of focus. Don't worry, Ella says. And again, there's that echo of other voices. This will only take a second.